Beets are a great source of nitric oxide, and you can get the benefits of 3 whole beets in just 1 teaspoon of Super Beets without the beet taste. No fuss, no muss. It's a great way to get your nitric oxide in your bloodstream elevated. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com. That's 800-738-2198. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we have one of my very favorite guests, Dr. Lise Alschuler. She's a frequent contributor here on Intelligent Medicine, and she's got a lot to say, particularly on the subject of cancer. She actually has a resume that is just, it's not really podcast friendly, because I probably use up about half the podcast going through all her exploits. She is a marvelous role model in the field of integrative medicine, and she's extremely prolific. And a lot of people think I'm energetic, but if you hear what she does, it really will knock you out. She's a naturopathic physician. She's a former president of her professional organization. She's co-author and known to many of you as the author of a great book, The Definitive Guide to Cancer, An Integrative Approach to Prevention, Treatment, and Healing. She herself is a cancer survivor. She has a radio program called 5 to Thrive Live, and it's a great program. You can go to www.5tothriveplan.com to access her radio program. I believe it's on iTunes and all the usual places. You can follow her on Facebook and Twitter. And she is about to tell us about a couple of other things that she's doing. So welcome to the program again. Please.
Thank you so much. You're one of my very favorite radio hosts because I have so much respect for you. So this is a treat.
Okay, we're a mutual admiration society.
Let's
get over it. Okay, all right. We'll get past that. So, Lise, it's wonderful talking to you because you're always very authoritative on the subject of cancer. And, you know, while there certainly one can make a case for natural cancer treatment, you know, sometimes we kind of delve into the realm of folklore. You know, we say, well, you know, there's this amazing Amazon herb, and, you know, we go down there and the natives say that it's great. It just makes cancer go away. But that just doesn't cut it in this modern scientific environment where we really have to, you know, cancer is a serious issue. And also we have a cancer establishment to deal with, and the cancer establishment doesn't want to mess around with things that are, you know, half-baked ideas in relationship to amazing cancer panaceas that, you know, can in some ways interfere potentially with conventional cancer therapies. So we'll start it right off the bat, because I saw an article about a week or so ago. Which the headline of the article was something to the effect that that omega-3 fatty acids or fish oil is now thought to interfere with chemotherapy. And I said, you know, I looked at the article and I read it and I said, well, you know, they're throwing around some technical language. I really need to delve into this. And so my first impulse was to email the article to you, and you said, yes, I'm on top of it. And as a matter of fact, I'm writing a detailed analysis of the article and a critique of the article. So, well, help us out with this this story. I mean, is it really now are oncologists now going to tell patients that they need to stop taking fish oil because of this?
Well, they probably will, unfortunately, because it was published in JAMA Oncology, which is notorious, by the way, for publishing negative studies on natural substances.
Right.
And they may not get past the headline, which in fact is along the lines, well, in fact, the actual headline is increased plasma levels of chemo-resistance inducing fatty acid after consumption of fish and fish oil. So,
say that again 10 times over real fast.
Yeah, right. So if they don't read past the headline, then they probably will start making this recommendation, which is quite unfortunate. This article was based on the researchers' prior work with mice, and they found in mice when they gave mice fish oils that there was a certain rather obscure fatty acid that the mice created upon metabolizing or digesting this fish oil, and that particular metabolite increased the resistance on the part of the mice's tumors to chemotherapy, so that the tumors grew actually more robustly when the mice were subjected to chemotherapy after they had been consuming or while they were consuming these fatty acids. So based on that observation, they then went out to discover if they could find the same metabolite in humans consuming fish and fish oil. And they did, in fact, observe this metabolite in humans who consumed fish oil at fairly moderate doses, actually, like a half a teaspoon size or a teaspoon size dose. So that was the extent of the research.
And if I could just stop you for a second, mm-hmm. it sounds somewhat inferential. In other words, mm-hmm. a fancy word, which means, okay, we saw this effect in mice, and we didn't see this effect in humans, but the humans make the same thing, so it could be that this could occur in humans. But there are no, I don't think there really are studies which suggest that humans who take fish oil while on chemotherapy do worse. In fact, you, in your rebuttal to this article, suggest that studies have been done which show that humans do very well when undergoing chemo and taking fish oil.
Right. You know, and this is not also unusual. There's many other instances where things that we observed in rodents, which if you think about it, I don't know any fish that eat fish, or mice that eat fish. So,
exactly.
You know, I mean, there's going to be
like, very it's like
different.
When they give like a high-fat diet or hamburger to mice get heart disease. Well, you know, it's not their preferred food, really. You know.
Right. So we see a lot of times what we observe in rodents does not translate into humans. That's been done over and over. And this is another example of that because, in fact, there are at least two well-designed clinical trials that have shown that when humans consume fish oil and they receive certain chemotherapeutics, including one was a platinum-based chemotherapy regimen, and another one was using an anthracycline-based chemotherapy regimen, that in fact the chemosensitivity was increased so that their tumors responded better to the chemo. So I think that the title of this was highly unfortunate, and this needs a lot more research before we can come to any conclusions beyond those that have already been demonstrated in clinical research, which is in fact that there is a synergy. Not to even mention the fact that there are a plethora of studies clearly demonstrating the cancer preventive effects of fish oil consumption. So, you know, I would hate for people to turn away from fish and fish oil on the basis of this article.
Well, you know, this brings to mind cable TV, you know, where they have like a Republican versus a Democrat, and they completely are diametrically opposed, and they go according to party line, and they'll argue based on, you know, like the most obvious fact of, you know, like somebody caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and the person whose party they belong to will say, oh, you know, that we don't know yet, that, you know, the evidence is not there. So some may say, well, you're a partisan of vitamins and supplements. Do you ever admit or concede that there is the potential for some supplements to interfere with a conventional treatment, say radiation or chemotherapy? Is that are you open to that possibility?
Absolutely. And in fact, I am constantly surveying the research and learning new things, integrating those things into my clinical recommendations. And in fact, you know, even as recently as last week, have learned about still yet to be demonstrated in human, but a potential interaction between an amino acid and tamoxifen, which is making me reconsider some of my recommendations. So I'm constantly thinking about things.
So you're evolving, and what I admire about you is you're also very self-critical, and it's not like you're gonna change your position in light of persuasive evidence. But you do not feel that this is persuasive enough to abandon the suggestion that patients with cancer take fish oil. Number one, and by the way, this study did not say anything about patients with cancer taking fish oil. It didn't say if you have cancer, you shouldn't take fish oil, or that fish oil in some way increases the risk of cancer. It just said that under circumstances where patients took one specific type of chemo, not all chemos, it was the platinum-based chemotherapies like cisplatin and, mm-hmm. You know, it goes by other names, that type might be problematic, but this is based on mouse research.
Right. Yeah. And I couldn't say it better. I mean, I definitely think that this does not change my practice. And there is other research on occasion that certainly does. So I think it's important to step back. I mean, if one assumes that clinicians, regardless of the label or the initials after their name, if they have at their primary objective the betterment of the health of their patients, then we're going to be paying attention to the research, even if it, you know, contradicts something that we do, and we're going to make changes in our practice.
Right. You know, physician, do no harm. That's our motto.
Yes. Right.
Above all, do no harm. So now let's talk a little bit about fish oil in relationship to cancer. Forget about the chemotherapy connection. There are a lot of benefits to fish oil for cancer prevention, but I also understand that it may help a phenomenon called cancer cachexia, or this wasting syndrome that patients have. Has that been your finding as well?
Yeah, in fact, I think most of the clinical research in the area of oncology actually started in this arena. There's quite a few enteral formulas, or when people are not able to eat and they're essentially on some form of tube feeding, there's various formulas that are used. And there has been over the last, gosh, I think over 20 years, movement or sort of study to figure out what the best formula is. And one of the inclusions that's fairly standard now is EPA, or essential fatty acids, omega-3 fatty acids, because a lot of the research has demonstrated that when you include these omega-3 fatty acids, the cachexia, or body wasting, that can occur in advanced cancers is somewhat lessened. So there's quite a bit of interest and documentation to support that effect, and it's, as I said, been integrated into standard enteral tube feeding formulas as a result. And then if we translate that to people who are eating normally and can consume fish oils on their own, there also is some indication that particularly higher doses of fish oil can prevent or delay or lessen the degree of cachexia.
Yeah, also there was one thing peculiar about the study is they said that the compound that was implicated in this comes from fish oil that's made from sardines and anchovies, but it doesn't apply to fish oil from other sources, or am I getting this nuance wrong?
Yeah, no, that's correct. And I, you know, that's something that there's also sort of a growing awareness of, when we think of fish oil, we tend to think of omega-3, and we think of EPA and DHA as the two main fatty acids. But in fact, there's a whole spectrum of fatty acids. Fish get their fatty acids from the algae that they eat. So my guess is that depending on where those fish are swimming and what algae they're eating, they're actually taking up slightly different compounds, and that's showing up differently in their oils. So I think this is still very new, and we don't have a full grasp of the differences to that level between one kind of fish oil and another.
Right. Okay. All right. So you know, suffice it to say that rumors of fish oils utility in cancer patients of its demise are exaggerated, to paraphrase Mark Twain.
Yes, that it would be a good conclusion.
Okay, so let's move on to something that you're excited about because you're spearheading it, and I'm excited about because I'm going to join forces with you to some extent. It's TAP Integrative, and this is, you know, we have a lot of health practitioners who listen to this, and a lot of astute listeners who are semi-pros. And this is going to be a really important source of information, correct?
Yes, I am super excited about this. This is, for me, honestly, a dream come true. I've been an educator at heart for a long time, and I've really wanted to bring forward something that will enable clinicians to learn from one another. And obviously, we're all kind of increasingly going to the internet to get information. So this is a online-based resource, educational resource. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, and it's really a resource for integrative healthcare professionals. I've had the good fortune of obtaining founding sponsorship from Integrative Therapeutics, and they've generously brought this forward from a financial standpoint. But what I like about TAP is that it's devoid of any commercial or branded information. So this is really, becomes a very trustworthy source. What it essentially is a place where we can highlight by clinical topic clinician experts. So, for example, you're going to be an expert, I think, on inflammatory bowel disease. And when we take an expert and we put them on tap, there's a lot of content that's generated in a lot of different ways. So we have video content, we have written content, we have audio content. All of this content goes through a peer review process where we take what the clinician has found to work in their practice and put it to the test of, is there some backing from the body of scientific literature to support this? And so everything becomes very tight from a sort of evidence-based perspective. And it's also organized in such a way that clinicians can go through the information and spend a lot of time, and they could read all of your material, listen to all of your interviews, for example, and come out, you know, an hour or two later feeling very refreshed in their knowledge base about inflammatory bowel disease management. On the other hand, if they have 5 minutes between patients, we've organized the information in a way where they can very quickly dip in, grab a clinical nugget, and get out. So they can also kind of move in and out of the information with a lot of ease. And you know, we have all different kinds of practitioners as experts. We have naturopathic doctors, medical doctors, chiropractic doctors, nutritionists. So I'm just really excited. I have to say that being the executive director of this and so involved in the whole process, I have gained so much more respect for the integrative healthcare field. The depth and breadth of knowledge and the combined, you know, focus on improving health is so awe-inspiring. It's really been, it's just totally rejuvenated my pride at being part of this movement of practitioners. It's really been great.
Well, that's excellent. You know, and you know, I share your excitement because, you know, I see the robustness of this movement. And, you know, we've been involved in this movement for a long time, me probably longer than you. And, you know, from a group of perhaps a few eccentric renegades, this movement has developed into a highly scientifically based and very specialized movement because, you know, we're seeing experts in very niched areas, you know, for like, you know, I'm taking on inflammatory bowel disease. You probably have experts on certain forms of you know, hormonal problems, female disorders, you know, who devote their entire practices to very specific maladies. And with experience, but also the scientific backing that it takes to come up with solutions. So that's great.
So is this a
subscriber service?
It is, yes. So, well, there's two layers to it. So there's a public-facing newsletter, which is actually quite informative, and all of this can be found on the website tapintegrative.org. TAP, by the way, stands for Teach, Advocate, and Practice, but tapintegrative.org. And the newsletter is great. We send out a weekly newsletter with a couple of very short summaries of recent news stories or research articles on some aspect of integrative medicine. So it's a nice way for anybody to stay up to date. Anybody can sign up for the newsletter. And then clinicians, if they qualify, it's a credentialed site. So integrative practitioners who want to become members pay a membership fee, which is, I have to say, very nominal, $149 a year. And they have full access to all of the information, which includes what I just mentioned. We have case studies, too, where we have three clinical experts together discussing a case, which is very rich because you can really hear their thinking process as they sort of dissect how they would assess this patient and what their treatment considerations would be. And we're soon to launch a forum so members can interact and learn from one another. So all of that's available behind the membership.
And I think you're really also exploring the potential of the technology to deliver this information because before people would have to read dry medical journals. And here this is more interactive. It's, you know, you take advantage of video, webinars, you know, the internet, I think, is really where it's at in terms of information transfer these days.
Yeah, and there's such a multimedia approach to it. On that note, one of my favorite features is we have these audio files or audio clips, as we call them, and they're short research commentary. So we summarize a clinical study and then go through kind of an analysis and commentary on it. And those are all downloadable, or you can actually listen to them on the go. So one of the things I do is when I'm taking my bike rides, I just put, you know, TAP website on, and even though I've recorded all those, I re-listen to them and just kind of refresh myself. And so, yeah, there's just, I mean, like you said, the internet is such a great way to start conveying information in a very in-time, you know, kind of at-the-ready manner.
Just make sure you don't use those completely noise-dampening headphones because they sound great, but then you just don't hear the oncoming truck horn.
Right, good idea.
and don't try doing it while riding your bike in Manhattan.
Okay, good.
As someone who's survived a hip fracture riding my bike in Manhattan, I don't recommend it. Okay, so, you know, I will tell you that, and this is quite independent of me talking to you about my getting involved with it, our nutritionist, Layla Mutin, who is joins me for a weekly podcast, a Q&A with Layla podcast, she approached me with this and said, I'm very excited about this TAP thing. I think I'm going to, you know, subscribe to that because it's going to be a great source of information. So kudos to you. You're bringing in already, you're creating a little bit of a buzz. So we want to get the word out. And so it's tapintegrative.org?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so we generally divide these podcasts into two parts, Lise. So let's stipulate this as part one. In part two, we'll talk a little bit about some of the products you're developing, the Pro Thrivers products. Also, upcoming seminars. I don't know how you do it. You are the definition of prolific. You are indeed. You really get the word out in a lot of levels.
Did you say crazy? I think you said crazy.
No, no, that means you do a lot. I didn't say crazy. I didn't say crazy. But maybe, but just, you know, in a good way, in a good way. Okay, so when we return, more in our discussion with Dr. Lise Alschuler. She's a naturopathic physician, and one of the topics I want to bring up in part two also is recent documentary, which is really an excellent documentary on cancer, Emperor of All Maladies. You read the book. It's also been a PBS special, and I want to hear from you with your perspective on it. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We'll be right back.